to the Global Research News Hour. I'm Steve Lenman. My guest today is Garda Gista. GlobalResearch.ca, of course, makes all this possible. And my co-host and editor, Michelle Chosudovsky. And I want to talk a little bit during the program on his latest article on the Gaza crisis. But let me tell you about my guest. Garda Gista is the founding director of the World Proud Assembly, initials WPA. She's also the editor. She's a freelance journalist, and she's the author of a forthcoming book titled The Gujarat Genocide, A Case Study of Fundamentalist Cleansing, and she's referring to India. Let me tell you what WPA stands for. It stands for Progressive Utilization Theory, and it means the progressive utilization and rational distribution of all the Earth's natural resources, not the way we do it now, where a tiny elite get most of the benefits and the rest of us just get crumbs. That's not the kind of world I think listeners to this program want. So we need to do something about it. We need to work for that better world. Garda, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, Steve. It's so nice to hear your voice again.
Oh, it's a special treat for me to be on air with you and to spend an hour talking about all the things going on in the world. We can only wish that we could talk about all the wonderful things going on.
Yes. Now, Steve, before we get started, I have to express my gratitude to you for your writings, because I think you write day and night, always heralding the downtrodden, neglected, starving human beings, oppressed human beings, and it's a tremendous service you do, and I have to state that on the air, that I'm so grateful that you're doing that for all of us.
Oh, Garda, you are very, very kind. I've admitted, and I think I've said it on air too, that it really all happened by accident, and I'm new to the game, because I retired a few years ago, and only about 3.5 years ago did I begin doing this, and I never planned it.
It
just happened.
Your entire life.
It's amazing the way fate leads you in certain directions, and I don't know. It may be that maybe this was planned by some greater power, some higher power, and here I am, and I began writing, and one led to another to another, and I've also said that I never had a radio interview until around mid-2006.
I see.
But goodness. This week alone, Garda, I've got 4 of my own programs.
Yes.
And I was invited on 2 others.
Yeah. But there's so much passion and caring and love for everyone, for the world, and in your writings. And that's the crying need. That's what we need today. You know, not people caring only for their families or for their communities, but people caring for an Iraqi man as much as they care for their American brother or sister. You know?
Oh, absolutely, Garda. And like you, we both care. And I think we both could make the same confession. What we're involved in and what we believe in and what we're working for, it's absolutely priceless.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, those people that do all of the plundering and pillaging, I just can't imagine they get the gratification that we get from what
you're
we're
right.
doing.
Yes.
When we hear that music, it means a commercial interruption is coming.
Mm-hmm.
So let's take it and come back, and we'll talk about what's going on.
Okay.
Welcome back to the News Hour. I'm Steve Lenman. I'm on with Garda Gista. Garda, there's so much strife going on. We both woke up last Saturday morning, and we learned about the attack on Gaza.
Mm-hmm.
That's always shocking when you hear these things, but it certainly didn't surprise me, because Israel does this all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It just happens that they had a very, very major assault planned, and of course this doesn't just come up.
Yeah.
We know at the very minimum this has been planned for at least the past 6 months.
Yeah.
And we also know that it has absolutely nothing to do with rocket attacks, because several times Hamas, the democratically elected government, declared unilateral ceasefires, and during that one time they did it for 18 months, got it, and the most recent one went on for nearly 6 months, and the only reason they were ever broken is because Israel never followed the ceasefire, committed violations, continued to kill Palestinians.
Right.
During the most recent ceasefire, Gaza, at least 25 Gazans were killed by Israelis. You don't hear that in the U.S. news.
Right.
You don't hear that on the BBC.
Right.
Or on National Public Radio.
What I read recently in the mainstream news, probably at yahoonews.com, was that Cheney claimed that Israel did not inform them of this, you know, coming invasion. And yet here in Chassidovsky's article, right at the beginning, he says that U.S. Deputy Secretary of State John Negroponte was in Tel Aviv on December 8th for discussions with Meir Dagan, director of Mossad. So what does that say to us?
Oh, I think I can say categorically, got it, I'm sure you'll agree with me, there is absolutely nothing Israel does that is not done jointly with the U.S.
Yes.
It's not just a matter of Washington knowing what Israel planned to do. They both, this was a joint operation.
Yes.
Absolutely, without question.
Yes.
I mean, we are the supplier to Israel of billions of dollars, much of their weaponry and technology, zero interest loans. They don't even have to be repaid.
Right.
There is nothing Israel does that is not done jointly with Washington.
Yes.
So this idea that we knew nothing about it is, I mean, it's ludicrous.
Yes. And this, you know, what Chassidovsky writes is really very painful, because it's so blatant, if we didn't realize it before, which some of us did, that this is a, it's targeting civilians, and it's to cause a forced migration or a genocide. It's telling Palestinians, you choose. Either you leave this land, or, you know, we'll genocide dare you. We'll make sure you die. You know, that's their choice. And it's heartbreaking.
It really is heartbreaking. It began that way in 1948 when 800,000 Palestinians were either forcibly displaced or slaughtered in cold blood.
Yes.
And it took Alain Pape to write about it. He dug out official documents in his book, The Ethnic Cleansing of Palestine, an Israeli historian, just an awfully courageous guy. He was on the program with me, Garda, some weeks back, and I certainly want to get him back again to talk about this. He now lives in the U.K. and teaches there.
Well, what are your comments about the timing of this bombing and ground invasion? You know, it's right in between the ending of one presidency and the beginning of Obama's presidency.
Oh, I think the timing is always important. We have to guess at what it means. It may mean they want to get as much of this done before Obama comes in, but they have nothing to worry about as far as his presidency. And James Petras, who's a frequent guest on this program, wrote just a stunner of an article. All of his articles are terrific, like Michelle's.
Yeah.
And he wrote an article titled The First Jewish President.
Yes, I saw that. I read that.
Oh, I mean, he makes a very strong case that Obama will be absolute continuity from George Bush, and he may even out-Bush Bush in terms of Middle East policy.
Yes, that's right. That's right. And
if Israel is worried, they have nothing to be concerned about with Obama.
Yes, but I couldn't help wondering, are they doing this before he actually is inaugurated, so that perhaps he looks clean, you know, and it was under Bush's reign that this happened, this invasion happened, and the Bush presidency sanctioned it? You know, are they still going to continue trying to hoodwink the American left and make them think that, oh, no, Obama's against all these wars?
I think what you're saying is very true, and it would probably be very bad timing to have a new president take office and bang, this assault happens.
Yes.
I mean, that would look terrible.
Yeah.
So you've got a new guy sitting there. He hasn't even my God, he hasn't even found the presidential dining room or wherever he eats. They're still giving him a tour of the White House,
yes.
And Israel launches this terrible
yes.
assault.
Yes.
So I
yes.
think they absolutely wanted to time it ahead of his coming in.
Yes.
Also,
yes.
they broke the six-month ceasefire
yes.
on November 4th, our election day.
Yes.
In other words, when we were paying attention to the election
right.
and not paying attention to what they were doing,
right.
and they came into Gaza and they killed
yes.
six Hamas people,
yes.
whoever they were.
Yes.
I don't know if they were so-called resistance fighters. I refuse to use the term militant
yes.
unless I put it in quotes.
Yes.
They're not militants. They're resistance.
Right.
Every bit as entitled to be resistance fighters
right.
as any others around the world.
Right.
Some of the past that were praised.
Yes.
And they killed six, and that's what broke the ceasefire.
Yes.
It wasn't Hamas who did it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And not a single Israeli was killed over that six-month period
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
until December 27th
yes.
when Israel launched its assault.
Yes.
And I haven't seen numbers this morning. Israeli soldiers have been killed.
Yes, yes.
But
mm-hmm.
I saw a count of something like four Israelis killed.
Right.
Apparently by rocket fire, I don't know. But four
yes.
Israelis killed, a
yes.
few injured. And
yes.
the latest count I saw this morning, earlier, Gaza,
mm-hmm.
was getting close to 600 Gazans have been
right.
killed.
Right.
And 2,700 or more injured.
Mm-hmm.
And these numbers always are way below the official count.
Right.
Because I've also read that they're still digging people out of rubble. Ramsey Baruth will be on the program tomorrow, along
very
with
good.
Phyllis Bennis.
Very good.
To talk yeah. about Gaza. And I spoke to Ramsey last week. He mentioned that around 300 known Gazans were declared by medical sources as clinically dead.
Mm-hmm.
In other
mm-hmm.
words, they're still alive and breathing,
oh.
but there's no hope of saving them.
Yes.
So they could die at any time.
Yes.
And that
yes.
was when the count was whatever the number was last week.
Yes.
So those numbers are going up. This
right.
assault continues. It's pretty outrageous.
Mm. And also, Trostadowski talks about, Israel turning Gaza into a cantonment area, you know, and it makes you want to call it maybe the Gaza paradigm, you know, because I think the British are about to do the same thing in Zimbabwe. I think Obama is planning to do the same thing with the Northwest Territories in Pakistan, also in Afghanistan. They're going to do the same thing, you know, just cut off a geographical area and turn it into a concentration camp. This is what they're doing now in Gaza.
I agree with you fully. Yesterday, with my guest, we talked about the economic crisis yesterday with Bill Engdahl,
mm-hmm.
and he mentioned that he paints a very grim picture of what very likely is ahead. No idea how long it could play out, but we're in very grim economic times globally.
Mm-hmm.
And he mentioned that this country has always had two trump cards, the power of Wall Street and the U.S. dollar as a reserve currency,
mm-hmm.
and that's in terrible disarray right now.
Yeah.
But it has its bottom line trump card, and that's its military.
Right.
We still have by far the world's most powerful military. And,
yeah.
Roosevelt got out of the Great Depression by World War II.
Going to war, yeah.
He desperately wanted to get into it
yeah.
and managed to bully the Japanese into attacking us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we got our war and we got out of the Great Depression.
Mm-hmm.
And Bill yesterday imagined, and I agree, it's a very strong possibility that maybe the plan ahead is to have another major conflict. I don't know that they're planning World War III.
Well,
but to broaden the wars going on right now.
Yes.
No doubt Eurasia is the target. Are we talking about Pakistan? Are we talking about Iran? Are we talking
mm-hmm.
about Syria? Are we talking about all of the above?
Yes, we're probably talking about all of the above. And also, if you followed Joe Biden's, a lot of his so-called gaffes or comments towards the very end of the campaign, he was regularly, almost daily, hinting at some kind of huge foreign policy event that was going to happen almost directly after inauguration. And he said, You have to be ready. You have to be ready to support Obama in your communities. Do you remember something like that he was saying?
You know, I missed that, but I'm not the least bit surprised.
No,
I mean, we got that with the advent of George Bush.
Mm-hmm.
Why not get it with the advent of Barack Obama?
Exactly.
And people thinking that he's a peace candidate and he's hopeful change.
Well,
you've seen the articles that I've written about him. I really wish I could have written something different, but you can only judge him by the people around him and by the things he says.
And his voting record.
And his voting record, absolutely.
Yes.
I mean, those things speak for themselves.
Yes.
And I expect some very grim stuff coming up once he takes office.
Yes.
Oh, we need to take another break, Carter. Let's do it and come back, and we'll pick this up.
Okay.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm on with Carter Gista. Carter, I've got to mention this, and it's part of what the Gaza operation is all about, which is the willful attacking of civilians.
Mm-hmm.
That is a key part of the operation.
Yes.
And Israeli officials have just about said it. And you can quote their words, and you can see that's part of what they're doing.
Yes.
The lead story this morning, the lead story on Haaretz, the Israeli paper, that's a combination of okay and awful.
Mm-hmm.
They've got some good reports, some decent reports, and they've got some pretty awful ones.
Mm-hmm.
But the lead story is 40 Palestinians killed in IDF strike on UN school.
Yes.
There's another website I go to, Man News, that's more accurate.
Mm-hmm.
They say it's 42, but that's close enough.
Yeah.
This was a UN school.
Yes.
This was a United Nations Relief and Works Agency school, UNRWA.
Mm-hmm.
And Israel, it's all clearly identified. Israel knows what it is, knows where it is.
Yes.
And they willfully attacked this school with kids in it.
Yes.
And they killed 42 Palestinians.
Yes. And it's all calculated.
It's all calculated, absolutely.
The civilians are the target, maybe even more than Hamas. You know?
Oh, there's no question about it. Did you read Michelle Chosudovsky's article, The Invasion of Gaza, Operation Castlead?
Absolutely, yes.
That is the single best article I've read on the Gaza crisis.
Yes.
And I urge listeners, go to globalresearch.ca. It's the top featured article on the page, the top one. And it's the clearest, best explanation of what this campaign is all about.
Mm-hmm.
Can I mention just a couple of highlights from it, Gaza? Garda.
Yes.
Garda, Gaza. That's easy to get that mixed up.
Yes. Actually, a very common Arabic name is Gada, G-A-D-A. So I feel quite happy about that, too. But please, yes, do mention the highlights.
Well, he talks about how it went back to a plan that Ariel Sharon initiated in 2001.
Mm-hmm.
And he mentions a couple of, it's got a lot of information in it, but a few key things it unfolded in steps. And it began with what I wrote about 2 years ago, the assassination of Yasser Arafat, the Palestinian leader.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote an article about it in January 2007.
Yeah.
And there was very, very little doubt in my mind that he was poisoned and he was murdered by the Israelis.
Right.
And anybody can go to can Google my name and just Google the assassination of Yasser Arafat. I forget my precise title.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll find it. They'll find the article.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or go to Global Research under my name and scroll down to January 2007 and you'll find the article.
Yes.
And you can read the evidence that we know that really looks like he was poisoned, and I absolutely believe it.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first step.
Why did they consider him such a threat?
I'm sorry, got to say that again.
Why did Israel consider Arafat such a threat? I mean, he was quite an old man, and I don't think he was so radical anymore.
He wasn't radical. It went back to the last so-called peace talk when Ehud Barak made his offer that the Palestinians couldn't refuse. It was so awful. It was so one-sided
mm-hmm.
that Arafat could not accept it. The last
okay.
time they got together at Camp David got her
okay.
with Clinton in 1999 or 2000.
Okay.
Ehud Barak, mm. the prime minister, Arafat, and Bill Clinton.
Yes.
And Barak made an offer that was appallingly bad, but
okay.
it was described as a very, very generous offer.
Yes.
And the media played it up that way, and it was a blatant lie.
Yes.
Arafat had given in to so much in the past, and this offer was so outrageous,
mm-hmm.
there was no possibility he could accept it.
Okay.
So he turned it down. He knew he could never go back to his people
yes.
and explain how we could ever accept an offer this outrageous.
Right.
So he didn't.
Okay.
That was the problem.
Oh, okay.
He became the enemy at that point.
Okay.
And you remember when they isolated him in his Ramallah compound?
Right, right.
And they tore half of it down?
Yes, yes.
Now, how mm-hmm. they slipped him the poison, I have no idea.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What do I know about stuff like that? It could have been stuff that was fed to him very slowly. And
yes.
Apparently, whatever it was, either they couldn't find it, what it
mm-hmm.
was, or they didn't go looking for it.
Mm-hmm.
There never was an autopsy performed on his body, if I remember correctly.
Right, right.
And I think he was buried very quickly once. He was in Paris.
Mm-hmm.
He was very ill.
Yes.
They let him out of Ramallah to go to Paris for
yes.
medical care.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Israel knew that he was too far gone. He was going to die.
Yes.
So they
yes.
let him die, and nothing
yes.
much was done.
Yeah.
And then they hurried him back for burial in the West Bank, and they got him very quickly into the ground.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so he became the enemy at that point because he wouldn't surrender completely.
Okay. Uh-huh. Yeah, I just wanted that background. So getting
then in 2005, we've got another break coming up momentarily. We'll continue. Mm-hmm. The next step was in 2005, the so-called Gaza disengagement,
mm-hmm.
getting the Israeli settlers out of Gaza. Well, that was another phony disengagement.
Yeah.
Israel didn't abandon its occupation. It just relocated its forces
yes.
to different positions.
That was a point that Trusadovsky made there, that the real reason...
We need to break out of...
Yes, I
hear
that.
They'll cut in. Let's break and we'll come right back.
Yes.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Welcome back to the News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman. I'm on with Gada Gista of the World Proud Assembly. Gada, very quickly on that so-called Gaza disengagement, Israel took its settlers. We both know this. I hope most mm-hmm. of the listeners do too, but for those who don't, Israel took its settlers, 7,000 or so, if I remember, and they simply moved them to new stolen Palestinian land in the West Bank. In other words,
yes.
Israel is taking every bit of the West Bank that it chooses to. They want to isolate, I think, the cantons that Michelle talks about are mainly, at least mainly in the West Bank, where they really are right now,
mm-hmm.
and what Israel has in mind for Gaza. Oh, heaven knows. I think their ideal solution to Gaza would be to open up the Sinai and let them all pour in there and let
yes.
Israel worry about, let Egypt worry about them,
yes.
or simply hand Gaza over to Egypt and let them take it as Egyptian territory. Egypt wants no part of it.
My feeling is that Israel wants the land, and so that they probably would not do that. But they would open the gate and let them leave.
Oh, they would let them leave, and they'll supply the transportation, Gada.
Yes.
If the Palestinians want to leave, that the most extremist of the Israelis, the most
mm-hmm.
extremists that would just as soon slaughter the Palestinians, that they will supply transportation,
mm-hmm.
complete with box lunches, sweet
yes.
music, you
yes.
name it,
yes.
and they will transport the Palestinians
yes.
outside of the land Israel wants for itself
yes.
to either Egypt or Lebanon or Jordan or, you know,
yeah.
whatever country might be willing to take them.
Yeah.
But of course, that's an outrageous proposition, because
yeah.
what company, what country would ever do anything like that?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I mean, would the U.S. even take a few million Canadians to suddenly cross the border and become U.S. Citizens or residents?
Right. Right.
I mean, I think how outrageous that would be to the states that were yeah. asked to accept all these people.
Yeah.
I mean, what are you going to do with them all?
Right. If we, Omar Barghouti, in a recent article, he did just that. He reversed the scenario that supposed Palestinians killed so many Israelis and did a ground invasion, you know, bombed them. You know, what would be said then about the Palestinians? You see, you know, when we reverse it, it's so outrageous. You know, but look what the Israelis are doing, and see the world just keeping quiet for the most part. See the United Nations giving a tacit approval, tacit acceptance of it. You know,
I'm going to send you an article tomorrow
mm-hmm.
about the failure of the quartet. I had written it a few weeks back. I just
mm-hmm.
let it sit there,
mm-hmm.
and I went through it this morning, and I just updated it very slightly.
Mm-hmm.
That it was human rights organizations that put together a critique of the quartet,
mm-hmm.
so-called major group, U.S., U.N., Russia, EU,
yes.
and how they claim to be concerned about Palestinian rights.
Yes.
And, of course, they do absolutely nothing.
No.
And
no.
this was all put together, this report. This was back in September.
Yes.
So it was long before the end of
mm-hmm.
December assault on Gaza.
Right.
But it's outrageous. I'm going to send that out tomorrow.
Great.
As I continue to put out material on occupied Palestine.
Yes.
But the third step that Michelle listed was the building of the apartheid wall, the separation wall
mm-hmm.
that's on stolen Palestinian land, maybe another 10-15% of the West Bank,
mm-hmm.
deliberately built not just to create any kind of separation. And it's got nothing to do with security. It's all
mm-hmm.
about stealing land.
Mm-hmm.
So they're building this wall.
Yeah.
Well, the International Court of Justice ruled it illegal, and
mm-hmm.
Israel just thumbs its nose and simply doesn't give a damn about international law or ruling.
Right.
They
right.
do whatever they want to do.
Right.
World opinion, whatever,
mm-hmm.
notwithstanding.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the next step, this surprised me a little bit, although the more I think about it, the more logical it seems, that Israel pretty much knew, with Arafat out of the way, that the 2006 Palestinian election would be won by Hamas.
Yes.
Israel knew it.
Yes.
They planned for it.
Yes.
And, I mean, they didn't want it to come out that way, and they tried to prevent it, but sentiment was pretty overwhelming.
They certainly made
to elect Hamas and not Fatah. They were so corrupt.
Yes.
And the only thing that kept Fatah going, the group that's now running the West Bank under Mahmoud Abbas, who sold out completely to Israel,
mm-hmm.
the only thing that kept them going was Yasser Arafat.
Mm-hmm.
Was a living legend, even though he failed his people, but he was a living legend.
Mm-hmm.
So as long as he was around, he would be the leader. So he mm-hmm. was gone, and a change of command was coming up.
Yeah.
So it turned out to be Hamas,
mm-hmm.
and Israel was all set and ready to go with what they would do, planned with Washington, with Western complicity, and everything that's happened since, including the siege, including
mm-hmm.
this attack.
Yes.
And the final step that Michelle lists is the ground attack.
Yes.
And,
yes.
Of course, that's underway now, and it'll probably continue for a good while. I mean, they the idea isn't to destroy Hamas. The idea is to weaken it,
yes.
Get rid of as much of its weapons as possible. I mean, what
yes.
have they got? They've got small arms.
Yes.
They've got homemade rockets.
Yes.
And Israel is the world's fourth most powerful military, a nuclear power.
Mm-hmm.
So the only way you can fight them is to fight a guerrilla action, just the way Hezbollah did in Lebanon.
Yes.
Just the way
the
Iraqis have done, the Afghans
right.
have done.
Right.
Just asymmetrical warfare, I guess they call it.
Yes, that's right.
And I can't believe that Hamas is going to surrender. I certainly hope they won't.
No.
Because so much is riding on this.
Well, I remember in the first attack on Fallujah, it was so asymmetric, but... I mean, the Iraqi men, women, and children were I mean, they were using their shoes, their sandals, to throw at the American soldiers. I mean, what can be more asymmetric than that? But they did it, you know, because of their pride. They're never going to let a foreign country take over their country. You know, maybe temporarily, but it's just not going to happen. The same with Afghanistan. You know, Obama may think that he can go there and regain control from the Taliban, but I think it's an illusion that he and some other American politicians have. It's just not going to happen.
Oh, you're absolutely right. It's not going to happen, and the Brits know it. The Brits were just crushed back in the 19th century.
Right.
And I can remember writing many months back, quoting British officials on just how savagely the Afghans took it out on British forces.
Yes.
I mean, they just chased them out of the country. It took a while, but they chased them out of the country.
Right. It's because the Western people, they have no understanding of the pride of the Arabs. They just can't grasp it. You know, you have to go there and live among them and see the extent of their, I don't want to call it nationalism, but the depth of their love for their own country, their own people, their own culture, which they consider far superior to our Western culture. These are concepts which are just alien to the Western mind.
And the courage to literally put their lives on the line or sacrifice their lives to have their own country, to run it themselves, to get rid of a foreign occupier.
Right.
While
right.
people in this country are so bloody blasé and complacent that they worry more about, you know, all of the bread and circus stuff that's around us all the time.
Yes.
And they can't be bothered with really getting out and putting their security on the line for something a lot better than what we have.
Mm-hmm.
And it keeps getting worse right here.
Yes.
And I think it and I feel it and I say it all the time.
Yes.
That if we and other people going through some of this, I mean, we're not at war. There's no shooting in the streets, no bombs going off.
Mm-hmm.
But there are terrible things I'm convinced of.
It's an insidious march in the direction of a terrible kind of fascism, isn't it? It's an insidious march by the government, by Congress, to pass, you know, unbelievably oppressive laws against American people. And sadly, the American people are just oblivious. And another thing I wanted to say, you were bringing up Obama. You know, I think his greatest trait is his ability to completely hoodwink the masses, because he's such a great orator, you know, and he knows how to use, you know, the words of Martin Luther King and John F. Kennedy, but he's a fraud, and he hoodwinks the masses. What a great job he's done of that. And we can almost see it coming, this total financial collapse that you said Bill Engdahl talked about, which we read about everywhere, worse than the 1929 depression. Simultaneously, we're going to hear this constant rhetoric, of how he cares so much about all of us, you know? And at the same time, he's going to tell us, oh, this World War III, it's absolutely necessary to keep us safe here. You know, I can just hear it all playing out. Can't you hear all that?
Oh, I agree with you 100%.
He is
a gifted speaker.
Yes.
And he will mesmerize. He will mesmerize intelligent people who should know better.
I know.
Exchanged an email or two with a couple before the election, before he was elected.
Yes.
People not necessarily saying, yeah, he really will deliver change. Their attitude was more that they were hopeful that there was a real possibility that he might.
Yeah, but they never examined his voting record, which was as hawkish as Bush. You know,
absolutely right.
Yeah.
I wrote an article comparing Nader with Obama, and I went right through his voting record.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty atrocious in the Senate. There's no question about it.
Right.
I mean, he pretty much right straight down the line was voting for the kind of stuff that you and I absolutely oppose.
Right.
People unfriendly stuff, that might be the way to describe it. Supportive of the power structure and and very unfriendly to the great majority of people in the country.
Right, right. And also very hawkish, you know.
Absolutely very hawkish.
Yeah.
Very supportive of the foreign wars.
Yes.
Backing the appropriations to fight them.
Yes.
At times saying one thing and doing something completely different.
Right.
And, of course, openly saying that he will now expand the military, send more troops to Afghanistan.
Right.
And he's been a little bit weasel on Iraq. But there's no question.
Yes.
The plan for Iraq is permanent occupation.
Well, you know, they just changed the terminology, right? Because from January 1st, combat forces could no longer be there because the legal, the law passed by Congress had ended on January 1st. So all they did is change the title of those combat forces. I think now they're called personnel. You see
well, they
saying?
Also call them trainers.
Yes, that's right.
Trainers.
Yes, that's right. So, you know, they just changed the semantics.
And what about here, Gata? The plans are to put at least 20,000 U.S. combat troops on U.S. streets.
Yes, I know that. And I believe that, I think I also read that during the inauguration, all of them will be in Washington, D.C. And that's also scary. It's reminiscent of the, I think during the Reagan era, some such exercises were carried out. Supposedly, they were exercises, but army, you know, militia were on the streets and they were going into homes, dragging people out of their homes, you know, just as an exercise. And it was terrifying. I've seen videos of it on the net, and so we don't know what's in store. We don't, you know. But you're right. They have been redeployed here, but it's probably because of the financial collapse and concern for how the American people are going to react.
That's what they're worried about.
Yeah.
They're absolutely worried about that there could be some very, very severe economic stuff coming.
Yes.
And unemployment is skyrocketing. People are under duress.
Yeah.
And we'll have to wait and see what the Obama stimulus plan is. But there's no question that the lion's share of it will benefit industry, not people.
Yes. And already,
there could be some small tax cuts for people, but the lion's share of it is to go to business and industry and even so-called infrastructure, which always takes a long time to do. The idea is to spend money and give it to companies, developers. The banks would be involved in it. That's what this is all about. The idea is to help business, not people.
Right.
By the way, I would envision that we could get into a likely enlarged conflict of some sort that we talked about earlier would be to have another false flag operation. I don't know if it would be a 9/11, but something, again, to scare the public.
Right.
Some of the Bush people in past weeks or months have come right out and said something to the effect that what we really need is another 9/11 event to solidify popular support for the administration.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because when that happened, and I remember writing about it, Bush's approval rating back pre-9/11 was about 50%, up or down a little bit, but basically about 50%.
Mm-hmm.
And literally overnight, he shot up to over 90%.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the absurdity of equating him at that time to a combination of Lincoln, Churchill, and FDR, it defies the imagination of the scriptwriters to come up with something like that.
Yes.
Well, he sure isn't that way now, but they'll do their best to build up Obama for whatever agenda they have in mind.
Yeah.
And at the same time, he's a Democrat, so, you know, the Republicans want to get back in again. So they may try to do to him at some point what they did to Clinton and attack him on all kinds of silly stuff that has nothing to do with the big issues at hand.
Well,
but we'll see.
I want to ask you, What, just, I know it's a, maybe a crazy question, but what do you see as the solution, Steve? What do you see as the solution, let's say, in Israel and Gaza? What is ahead, or what should be done?
Oh, boy. What can
be done?
How to solve the problem? Well, I'll say this. I am so encouraged by what's going on around the world.
Mm-hmm.
There are just massive protests going on.
Yes.
In the U.S. alone, I read, and I said it in one of my articles.
Yes, I read that.
That there were protests in 65 cities,
mm-hmm.
in 30 separate states.
Mm-hmm.
For Palestinians, that never happened before.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's great world outrage on every continent. I don't know about Antarctica, but on every continent.
Yeah.
If this continues, and if somehow it can grow, to me that's the best chance. We've got to take another break. Back to the News Hour. Got to, we're in our last segment and just have a few minutes left. Let me do one thing so I don't forget. Give listeners your website because they need to know about the site. They need to know what you do. It's so important.
Oh, thank you, Steve. The URL is www.worldprout, that's P-R-O-U-T, assembly.org. And it's about a new economic model. To replace capitalism and communism, which are both centralized economies where the money is controlled by a handful of elites, whether it's a state bureaucracy or a handful of corporations. So the idea of Prout is to, you know, transfer power from those elites and give it to the common people, something along the lines of what Hugo Chavez is doing in Venezuela by creating over 110,000 cooperatives. You know, it's giving local people power over their own resources in their own communities. That's the key, I would say, the key feature of Prout. But at the same time, World Prout Assembly is about justice. It's about fighting for justice in every sphere of life, you know, and that certainly includes justice for the people of Palestine. You know, which is why I'm happy to talk about their situation today. And but again, in every issue, I get so frustrated. It's this frustration with the fact that people are suffering so much. You know, one time I talked to a great man, Patrice Greenville. He's an old Chilean revolutionary. I talked to him for a couple of hours on the phone one night, and at one point he said to me, "Garda, you know, I cry every day because of the suffering in the world. I can't bear it." And, you know, I never forgot that statement of his. You know, if we had more people like that who could not bear the suffering in the world and we could unite and do something glorious to change things, you know, that's why just before the break I asked you, what is the solution? That's what we have to focus on.
It's got to come from us, Garda, because it'll never come from the top down.
It's
for people to suddenly realize that what's going on around us is harming ourselves and our families and our welfare.
Yes.
And if we don't do something about it, then it won't get done.
Yes.
And what's happening in occupied Palestine and Gaza, I mean, these things happen right here. The tanks don't come in. The bombs don't fall.
Yeah.
But I could, about a mile from where I live in downtown Chicago, I can walk to a housing project where poor people sometimes don't get a meal or two a day to eat because they have no money.
Yeah.
So they're suffering, and no one cares about them.
Yeah.
And they're just hidden. They're hidden in plain sight, Garda.
Yeah.
And we're not talking about a few. We're talking about many, many thousands of people.
Yeah.
And the kids go to school hungry, and they have next to nothing. And it's a very terrible situation. It's through no fault of their own.
Yeah.
In many cases, you've got single mothers, and they've got small children, and they need to somehow bring in a few dollars the best they can, and take care of their kids.
Mm-hmm.
And we ought to try that sometime and see how simple it is not.
Yeah.
So there are terrible things happening, and All of these things affect us.
And also, as we've established here, that the suppression of civil liberties is going to grow right alongside the so-called war on terror.
Oh, indeed it is, Gata. We are out of time. That music tells us. I just have time to thank you for coming on. It's been a swift but a wonderful hour with you.
Well, I have to, again, thank you for all your glorious writing.
Gata, will you come back on again?
Certainly.
Oh, Gata, again, my pleasure and my very best. And we'll be communicating by email and whatever.
Thank you so much.
And thank you all for listening. Tune in tomorrow for a Gaza special.